I apologize. I'm
Thanks,
talking away and you couldn't hear me. I was muted. I apologize.
No.
Good morning and welcome everybody to Coffee with the Coder episode 86. Thank you so much for joining us today. Some of you insiders, you just heard a wonderful bunch of tips on working remotely, which is new to some folks and not new to others. We're glad to have you with us today, and thanks for telling your coworkers as well. hi, Paula.
Good morning, Pam. Yeah, that was, I knew you were going to cut me off, so I was like trying to talk really fast at the end. So there's
Yay.
So many more tips, guys, that I could share, but, you know, those are just some of the basics.
Yes, and I would welcome those of you who are on the Coffee with the Coder Facebook page to share some tips that you've learned. That would be a way for us to all encourage one another.
I mean, interrupt you, Pam, too. Let's do what that other post was, and some of you may have done it then. You know, hey, just for fun, post something about, you know, what's going on in your home if you have others living with you, and describe it, maybe your kids or your spouse or whatever. Describe it as my coworker is doing this today. So, for instance, my statement is, because we have a potty training 2-year-old in our home, is that my coworker was walking around without pants all day. So just if you think about it today, post it. That'll just be a funny, and we can and get to laugh and see what others are doing.
Thank you. Okay, so now that we're all ready to focus on questions, are you ready?
I am.
This first one is an anonymous CPT coding question, and thank you so much for putting down how to pronounce this word. I would not have pronounced it correctly. Is the Ladder J procedure a tendon transfer?
Okay. So, yeah, so it's spelled, just for you guys who aren't familiar with it, is L-A-T-A-R-J-E-T. So you would say probably, you know, Ladder Jet, you know, but it is pronounced Ladder J, and the person is asking if this is a tendon transfer procedure. Basically, the Ladder J procedure is an open anterior stabilization of the shoulder. It's done for shoulder dislocations. The best way I've heard the procedure explained is that the ball of the shoulder tends to pop out of place into the anterior position. So it pops towards the front of the body. In order to keep this from happening, what they do is they take a piece of bone, they take a bone graft, and they place it on the front of the shoulder to build up the front of the socket, and it acts as a bumper so the ball cannot dislocate towards the front. So now think about bowling, if you will. So when you bowl down the alley and throw it to the right or the left, the ball invariably goes into the gutter. So you're thinking that's popping out of place, right? It should be going straight down the alley. But if there are bumper guards in place, such as when you're bowling with kids, you put those bumper guards, the ball will go straight down the lane and it won't go in the gutter. So it's the same with this bone graft. On the front, it holds the shoulder in place. So no, it is not a tendon transfer procedure. That's not the intent of the procedure, I should say.
Thank you. That was well described. I like the bowling analogy. okay, so now here's another anonymous question. This one's from an inpatient rehab, okay? It's, does the etiologic diagnosis specificity need to be documented precisely by the rehab physician, or can the coder use the specificity from the notes within the rehab stay for coding the specificity of the etiologic?
Okay, and then I think she gave some examples too, Pam.
Oh, okay. I thought that was not. All right, let me read those. So here's an etiologic diagnosis, left femur fracture. The ortho note in the rehab visit is left intracanteric femur fracture. ORIF site looks clean and healing nicely. And then here's another example, etiologic CVA, neuro note in rehab visit, patient had a stroke due to left MCA stenosis with dysphagia. Another example says etiologic is osteomyelitis of left foot. And the podiatrist states chronic osteomyelitis of left foot in a patient with DM, amputation in site healing well. Can I code both the DM and osteomyelitis code with the chronic osteomyelitis code as the etiologic?
Okay, yes. Okay, so now it absolutely, so think about, I don't know if the person requesting the answer to this question has coded in acute inpatient or just codes acute inpatient rehab. And either way, the answer would be the same, of course. It is appropriate to pull specificity from other provider documentation, not from nursing or not from, you know, other ancillary documentation, except in certain cases, which we'll talk about. But yes, another physician can give greater specificity. So the ICD-10 guidelines indicate that, and I'm going to read it specifically, code assignment is based on documentation by the patient's provider, for example, the physician or other qualified health care practitioner legally accountable for establishing the patient's diagnosis. There are a few exceptions, such as codes for BMI, body mass index, depth of non-pressure chronic ulcers, pressure ulcer stage, coma scale, and the NIH stroke scale. So that can come from specific information related to those can come from ancillary staff, but the physician themselves has to state that the condition or the situation exists, and we get greater detail from those other ancillary notes. So, yes, you can pull specificity of, say, the type of the fracture or the location of the CVA or the diabetic osteomyelitis from another provider seeing the patient while in rehab, such as the neurologist or the orthopedic surgeon that you mentioned. But remember, if the documentation is conflicting, the rehab provider is our main physician. He's considered, you know, our sheriff, if you will. And a query may be appropriate in that situation. You may have to query the primary physician. Now, it gets a little dicey sometimes when you're primary physician is a hospitalist and your consulting physician is the rehab physician, because it's not that it's dicey. You can still do the same thing, but it causes, I guess, more conflict in our coding questions, because the CMS rules say the IRF physician is the sheriff, if you will, about how things go, but our coding rules drive us back to the acute admitting physician or the attending physician, not the admitting, but the attending physician. Regarding to that osteomyelitis, you would also report the chronic osteomyelitis and the diabetes, as those are combination codes and they are needed to report the patient's condition. So, yes, thank you for your question.
Yes, and thank you. I apologize. I missed part of that at the beginning. Now I've got another anonymous question, and what this means is that since all these questions are anonymous, somebody who dialed in today is going to win our mug. So I'm furiously writing down phone numbers. Last four of the phone numbers. It's so fun. You just pick the right day. It's always the right day to dial into Golf with the Coder when we're having this session. So here's our last anonymous question. This one is for a swing bed in a PPS hospital, which is not critical access. Can they bill separately for an outpatient procedure, like a CT or an MRI or something like that?
Okay, excellent question. So I'm going to refer you to a couple regulations from Medicare. They are in the, it's 100.1, I think, in the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual. It's for swing bed services not included in Part A PPS rate 100.1. I'm going to read you specifically what it says. It says, for SNF level inpatients, rural non-CAH or critical access swing bed hospitals must submit all services that are not specifically excluded from consolidated billing on their Part A swing bed bill. However, they are eligible for additional payment outside the bundled SNF PPS rate for those services that are excluded from SNF Part A consolidated billing requirements. And it goes on to say further, because the swing bed hospital itself still remains subject to the hospital bundling requirements specified in 1862 of the Act and 42 CFR 411.15M, it retains the Medicare billing responsibility for any excluded services to which the hospital bundling provision applies. Accordingly, it would use a separate inpatient Part B claim for bill for such services. And then I'm going to skip a part of this because it goes into talking about some more details. But now, and I would ask you to go to that section to read it in specifically if you were the one that asked this question. Also, I want you to read 20.1 because that gives you the specificity of the services, the specifics, I guess I should say, it's that coder talk specificity of services beyond the scope of Part A SNF benefit. And those include, and each one of these, when you're reading regulatory guidance, each one of these has a lot more information related to it. So I'm just giving you the high level. Physician specialty services that are specifically described in 20.1. Hospital facility charge for clinic services. Certain cardiac catheterizations. certain CT scans, certain MRI scans, certain ambulatory surgeries involving the use of the hospital OR or comparable facilities with the exception of an ambulatory surgery center, certain radiation and chemotherapy services, chemotherapy drugs and administration services, certain radioisotope services and prosthetic devices, certain angiographies and lymphatic and venous procedures, emergency services, ambulance services when they're related to an excluded service, screening and preventive services, and then they go on actually to give you, say, CTs, cardiac casts, MRIs, radiation therapy, which we just talked about, all of those, and they give you outpatient surgery HCPCS codes, ranges, except for those that are in the exclusion list, because there is an exclusion list, dialysis services for patients with ESRD and hospice care. So all of those are excluded services in the SNF consolidated billing. So yeah, the answer is yes, but you got to go read this in detail to see which ones and what the rules are surrounding each one, and then go look at the exclusion list. And remember, consolidated billing applies only to Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries, not the managed care organizations. So that said, that was just the short answer. And if you wanted to know more about that or you need the links, we can make sure Pam puts those links on the copy of the recording of this call. And I appreciate you here today. So, Pam, back to you.
Thank you. Okay, so that was fun. Now I've got this stack of numbers. just moving them around under the desk. So let me grab one up and let's see who's going to be our winner today. It's going to be someone whose phone number ends in 3815. So I will reach out to you, 3815, and find out where to send your mug. Congratulations. We're so happy to you have shared this day with us. Please tell your friends because 2 weeks from today, let's see, what would the date be? April the 13th, and we're going to meet again. Yes?
Send in questions, guys. We want your questions.
Yes. Even if they're anonymous, we still love to have your questions because our team loves reaching down and looking for the chapter and verse on all of these questions. So we hope that you're staying safe and being well, and we're going to be keeping all of you in our prayers for this situation that we're all dealing with. And do reach out to us with coffeewiththecoder@aq-iq.com.